This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Mr. Rooney, you want a ride? Hey, end of Ferris Bueller's day off. He's all beaten up. He's lost to Ferris. School bus pulls up. Has to get on. Walk of shame. Get on the bus. Thank you, Kenny. All right. It is a code word hour. Somebody each and every day this week is going to win an Artem Zub jersey. Sends Adidas Pro jersey. Last week of this contest, we'll be listening this hour. We'll do it again in the 1 o'clock hour. Sometime during the show, we're going to be giving away 4-pack of tickets to the final home game of the Sens season against the Carolina Hurricanes on April the 10th. And again this hour and each and every hour on the show, we'll be listening for the Kenny Garbage at some point. And if you're caller 25 at 750-1200 star 1200, you're going to win tickets to game one. Generals 67s coming your way Thursday night at the Slush Puppy Center in Gatineau. Dave Cameron, head coach of the 67s, will join us at the top of the hour coming up at noon. Without further ado, we've teed it up here. In case you missed it, I'm going to play you the interview with Gary Bettman off the top of the pregame show from last night covering the sale and also a few other potential league issues. So here it is, the commissioner Gary Bettman from last night on TSN 1200. Hey, I just saw that the NCC put out a statement just saying they met with you and went well and what have you. And
is that what they said?
Basically, that's the Coles Notes version. Okay. How's your time been in Ottawa so far today? Did you meet the mayor, meeting with the NCC officials?
I did both. Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly is with me, and these were really more courtesy calls to make sure that we were all focused on the future of this team here in Ottawa. There was nothing asked for. It was really to make sure that we had a relationship moving forward and that the lines of communication are open. Ultimately, what happens with the arena is going to be a decision to be made by the new owner, whoever that might be.
What's interesting now with the NCC, I guess I'll first say, is it the preference of the league to be LeBreton Flats, or are all options on the table still in the city for a new arena?
I think, speaking for a new owner, who I don't know who it is or may be yet, all options will be on the table, and that's what the prospective owners are being told. They may want to stay here at Canada Tire Center and do some work here and build a project around the arena. They may want to move downtown to LeBreton Flats. They may want to move downtown. I understand there may be two or three other potential sites that would work. That's really going to be up to the new owner to decide. The one thing that everybody should be comfortable with, and I've said this repeatedly, if this team is moving, the only place it's moving is downtown. It's not leaving Ottawa. The Senators will be here no matter who buys the club.
Well, music to the ears of Sens fans, of course. Another thing that the NCC in their brief statement kind of implied it flexible.
So if we're now on a separate comment that they made, it wasn't such a brief statement.
Well, no. We all read into things here and just talked about provisions which offer flexibility to ensure the success of this bold and ambitious project. The land that's available, is that a possibility for the new group to negotiate with the NCC, whoever owns this team, to get more land for more development?
That's something that the NCC would have to discuss with the new owner. Again, I didn't come here to weigh into the negotiations or to make judgments. I came here because I was coming to a game. The mayor and the NCC thought it would be a good idea while I was in town for us to get together, make sure we have an open channel of communication. If we can be helpful to the process, we will be. But ultimately, we've got to get a new owner, and that owner is going to have some work to do to decide what they want to do with this building or the potential of a new building.
What stage would you say we're in? I know at the GM's meetings, first stage was done, right? Moving in the second stage. Are we still in the second stage?
We're still in the second stage. What's going on is there's now on-site due diligence. Mm-hmm. Prospective owners, there's been some winnowing of the number of bidders, and the more serious bidders, of which there are at least a half a dozen, are now engaged in a process of coming to see the building, meeting with the front office, and doing more due diligence than they did for their preliminary bids. The good news is we have a number of substantial owners groups who are interested in a meaningful way of owning this team and owning it here in Ottawa.
Does the possibility exist that maybe one or two of these groups could team up in the end of the line?
That would require speculation. I'm not sure, based on who's bidding and what they're bidding, that would even be necessary. But we've got to go through a process. Now, remember, after we get done and we get to the anointed party, then you've got to go through the lawyers doing contracts. Mm-hmm. And we have a league approval process to get through. A new owner has to be approved by three-quarters of the ownership of the league. And that's something that we haven't done yet. It would be premature to do it. So there's still, 2 to 3 months of work to be done. So everybody take a deep breath, sit back. We'll get through this process, and we're going to come out of it on the other side with a really good, strong new owner.
Is it important to you at all to have some local representation? I know there's a group that's been trying to maybe be a part of the winning bid. Is that important to the league?
I think it's, again, more up to that group. You don't necessarily – we have plenty of franchises that have owners that don't live in the community, and we have franchises like the group that bought Seattle, the expansion team. While the person who bought the team could have done it on his own, the lead general partner, David Bonderman, the fact is he wanted some local representation and ownership. I think it all depends on who it is and what it is they intend to do in terms of the building. And so, you know, I know there's been a lot of speculation. A lot of it hasn't been right. I just, again, let's let the process play out. We're going to get to a good place for this franchise and for this city.
You've been at this a long time. You've seen it all.
Thank you for aging me.
No, with this franchise. Well, I remember as a young reporter, I was at a lot of news conferences with Rod Brydon in those days, and we wondered if the team was going to stay. And I think it's quite clear the team is not going anywhere. It's not leaving this town. It's just a matter of where the new building is going to be.
Look at how great the team's doing, by the way. Yeah. Look at how attendance has come back post-COVID. Look at how well the team is playing on the ice. They're playing meaningful games at the end of March. I think the future, putting aside the new ownership, is extraordinarily bright for this team.
How, and where I was going to go with that train of thought is it's amazing, isn't it, where things stand now. 20 years ago, you found Eugene Melnyk to save the franchise. And now you're in a process where, is it six, Gary? how many interested parties? You've got multiple interested parties.
You're in the ballpark.
Okay, right? No, but seriously, it's kind of a tender situation at this point where you have genuine interest to keep the team here when 20 years ago, that was a tough sell.
Well, but I think the league is in a different place. Yeah. Our franchises have never been stronger. The game has never been better, more exciting, more compelling, more competitive. And the business of the game has never been stronger. I mean, we're going to approach $6 billion in league revenues this year, which is a record, which is incredible when you think about what we went through as a league. All sports did, all businesses did, all people did. Doesn't mean we have any greater claim to difficulty through COVID than anybody else. But the point is we came out of this strong in part because we had great cooperation from the players and the Players Association. We have the strongest ownership, as I mentioned, that we have ever had. So we had the ability to endure a difficult time. The league's in a good place, and as a result, so are the Senators.
Speaking of league revenue, have you had a chance to speak with the new executive director of the NHLPA, Martin Walsh, and cap, and could it go up? And the debt, you said, could be paid at the end of the postseason.
So Marty Walsh and I actually had a meeting last week in my office.
Okay.
It was really more of a get acquainted and making sure that we could talk to each other candidly and openly. And it was the beginning of forging a relationship. I mean, we knew each other from when he was the mayor of Boston, but this was really a new beginning. And he's got a lot to get up to speed on, and we weren't pushing for any immediate resolutions because it wasn't going to happen. What I have said is revenues have come back in a very robust manner. We're ahead of projection in terms of paying off the $1.5 billion escrow that the league was owed by the players. We're probably going to be paid off a year or two more earlier than we had predicted. Is it possible it gets paid off this year? Yes. Is it likely? I don't think so, but it is possible, and we'll have to wait and see.
Regional sports in the United States is changing with Bally and AT&T. How will you navigate that and what the regional sports model might look like in the future?
Well, I think we're going to see more direct-to-consumer streaming. I think this is a point in time where the role of how regional sports channels are distributed will be evolving. For us, the most important priority was making sure our games are available to our fans, and that will be the case. We've been assured both by Warner Brothers Discovery and Diamond Bally's that they will get us certainly through this regular season. Once the playoffs begin, all games are available on our national partners in the United States, whether it's TNT or ESPN, ABC. And then once we get through this season, we will continue evaluating what the options are moving forward. Again, first and foremost, games need to be available to our fans. And secondly, the business model is going to evolve, and we'll deal with that.
Have you completed your Hockey Canada investigation? We're waiting maybe for London Police. Where are we at with that?
We're much, much, much closer to the end.
Okay.
I know the investigators still need to do a little bit of work, and then they've got to compile the report. But it's getting closer to the end, and like everybody, I'm anxious to see what the conclusion is and what, if anything, we have to deal with.
Two more quick ones for you. Igor Larionov would like to see the Russian Federation secede from the IIHF, so maybe Russian players can play in a World Cup at some point. Those comments in the last couple of days, do you have a thought on that?
Well, it's complicated, and it's more complicated than that, because the other federations have a say on who they play against.
Yes.
So I don't know, you know, whether or not just withdrawing from the IIHF changes anything. We'll have to see.
All right. We will leave it there. Thank you very much, because I know you got to run. You got a lot of things to get to. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, and it's always great to be here.
All right, so there's Gary Bettman from the pregame show last night. You know, thanks to the league for setting that up. And originally I was told I could have maybe 5 to 7 minutes because he did have to run and go to different functions. It was a very busy day. And I had two more questions that I said towards the end, and the one I didn't get to, we're kind of get to it here because we went 10 minutes. And I could feel the people with Gary Bettman. It's like, all right, might be time to wrap this up. Anyways, it was good stuff from the commissioner. Really appreciate the time that he was able to give our station.
He did a good job, Lloyd. He asked the questions that were all on the minds of Senators fans. So good job doing that.
Thank you. I just hope people got
something
out of it.
Didn't make it about you. You just asked the questions.
Yeah, just want to get the information that we can under this situation, and I thought it was, I asked about Hockey Canada, and there's more on that, so we'll get into that. And I brought up if you're thinking, why are you asking about the regional sports in the States, who cares? Well, that was piggybacking the revenue question about the players paying back the escrow or the caps going, all of that. It matters, right, of how much money is in the league, how quickly, they can be made whole and all that, because that's a big deal. With Bally and Warner Brothers, which is AT&T, regional sports in the States here, to have that implode the way it has. Now, you're always, and that's the commissioner says, the number one thing, the priority is make sure that the games are available. And they are. And they're fine for the rest of the season. And you know what? To use the classic Lou Lamoriello saying, if you got time, use it. The timing of this gives them time because it's national in the playoffs, right? It's all available nationally in the States. So they're going to have the off season, and they're going to have to figure this out, as Gary Bettman said. But, it's just about a different type of mousetrap now. The content is still going to be wanted. How is it going to be delivered? And direct-to-consumers seems to be one of those options. But, how will that be monetized? Will that affect the money flowing into the league? In the short term, will that have to get to a certain point in time? So that's why that topic was broached here. So I did say at the end there, you might have been listening carefully. I have two more for you, and I didn't get to the last one because we were tight for time. Patricia Bull also had a chance to speak to Gary Bettman last night, and Trish was able to get to the one question I didn't get to, and that was Pride Nights. And we had another example of a player that declined to take the warm-up last night, and that was Ilya Lyubushkin of the Buffalo Sabres. And, you know, the Stahl brothers were booed at times last night at Canadian Tire Center as a members of the Florida Panthers, and James Reimer and Ivan Provorov. And, you know, and then you've had multiple teams pivot from what they were planning to do at relatively the last moment. So anyways, it's a topic. It's, you know, what does the commissioner think about all this? And here's what the Patricia Bowl asked Gary Bettman, and this is the answer.
So I want to ask you about the Pride Nights in the NHL, this incredible initiative to be more inclusive. It was very successful here in Ottawa, but you're seeing in particular markets certain players deciding not to wear the Pride jersey. The Stahl brothers are here tonight. There's another player in Buffalo this evening who said he will not do warm-up with the jersey. Was it a mistake to let each team dictate how to handle it? Should there have been some repercussions with the first player who said, no, I'm not doing that?
This is the first time we've experienced that, and I think it's something that we're going to have to evaluate in the off-season. I think in terms of the profile and the platforms that we've been using consistently for Pride Nights, we've been very aggressive and supportive. This is one issue where players, for a variety of reasons, may not feel comfortable wearing a uniform as a form of endorsement. But I think that's become more of a distraction now, because the substance of what our teams and we have been doing and stand for is really being pushed to the side for what is a handful of players, basically, who have made personal decisions. And you have to respect that as well.
All right, so there's the... So that was pretty definitive, actually, right?
Oh,
when,
yeah.
When you really listen to what he had to say, yeah, we're going to look at that in the offseason,
well,
and they're going to have a plan in place now.
And what's your conclusion coming out of that? Because I think it's, and I could be wrong, it's just an interpretation. I think we've seen the end of players being asked to wear the sweaters in warm-up. I think teams will continue to have Pride Nights and all kinds of wonderful initiatives on the team level to be able to endorse the idea of making hockey welcoming to all, to everybody, to all. But coming out of that, he basically said they recognize the individual's rights to not agree. And I, that's what I'm left with, is that players are not going to be asked to wear, you know, special warm-up sweaters or whatever. That's my takeaway. I could be wrong, and it's a small snippet. There's room for lots of interpretation, but coming out of that, that's the way that I feel. The NHL will continue to be very robust, I think, in having Pride Nights and a bunch of events around their Pride Nights. But I think when it comes to the actual players, I don't think they're going to be asked to wear Pride jerseys at this point. What did you think?
I think that's where this is going. But to further that, I wonder if the NHL will do a catch-all. Players aren't required to do anything. They're not required to wear Military Appreciation Night warm-up sweaters.
Yeah.
They're not required to wear St. Patrick's Day warm-up sweat. You know what I mean? And that will be the league's way of just doing a catch-all.
Yeah.
And that might be, I hate to say it, the path of least resistance in the league's mind. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, CJ.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, to like, it's a kind of an all or nothing scenario there. But the league, I think Gary Bettman kind of made that clear there as well. There will be Pride Nights still.
Yes.
But I don't know if we're going to be seeing teams, because not every team does this anyway as it stands now. Not every team has a Pride sweater made up that players wear in warm-ups. It doesn't happen for every team. Oftentimes it's rainbow tape and it's other things in a warm-up, and that's it. Maybe that's all it will be, right? It'll be everything else that Pride Nights have come to be across the league, but nobody will be wearing sweaters, right, in warm-ups. I would not be surprised. And you can have your own opinion of that. I'm just talking. I'm reading tea leaves like CJ.
Yes.
I'm just telling you where I think it's going, and it appears I think that's where this is going.
Yeah. So. And anyway, if players want to have, if players want to make their own statement, as you just said, in terms of maybe wearing rainbow tape on their stick or whatever, then maybe we see that. But I think it's really being left up to the, there won't be a general, everybody's, here's your sweater for the warm up. You need to wear it. I think that's done. But I think there will still be room for players if they want to have rainbow tape on their stick for the warm up. I think we'll see some players make, I think we'll see some players still make statements like that, because it's been, it's clear now that there's a certain number of players who are willing to put up with the backlash over not supporting it, right? That's become clear now. That they'll put up with whatever comes their way, for taking the public position of not supporting the Pride initiative by their club. So I think that leaves some wiggle room for other players to still make a statement of support, short of a mandated kind of club initiative. So I still think there'll be some individual. I think there'll still be some room for individual statements by players to show their support for the Pride initiative. Yeah,
absolutely. All right. Once again, thanks to that's courtesy of CDB Ottawa and Patricia Bull, with that Q&A just on that subject with the commissioner. Something I just didn't have time to get to at the end of our visit on TSN 1200 last night. So we'll get back into some other things that the commissioner had to say. The Hockey Canada stuff was timely, as it turned out.
Very.
Because within an hour, Rick Westhead had an update on where that stands as well from a Hockey Canada can you play or not perspective. So we'll hit on that next. And also, it's a code word hour. So be listening for that here in the 11 hour. Be listening for the Kenny Garbage. We're going to be giving away 67's tickets still to come. Dave Cameron's at the top of the hour at noon. We're back in a moment on In the Box at TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Kenny, are you theming today? Are you going like 80s movie song thing?
Nope.
No? Okay, just asking.
Nope, just doing me.
Just doing you. You do you, Kenny.
Typically do.
All right. You heard a code word, so we'll do it again in the 1 o'clock hour. We've got the 67's tickets each and every hour up for grabs as well. And we've got one four-pack of Sens tickets for the Carolina game, last game, home game of the season, before 2 o'clock this afternoon. Dave Cameron, head coach of the Ottawa 67's, is going to join us at noon. And, Kenny, really quick, just before I want to pivot back to the Hockey Canada update, I just saw you tweet out that there is a suspension on the Oshawa Generals side of things. There's a player that's going to miss the first two games of the series.
Yeah, Kimo Gruber, 17-year-old forward from Switzerland, will be suspended. Didn't have much of an impact over the course of the year, being so young, just 3 goals in 42 games. But it's another player that's out. And with a team in the Generals that's already dealing with a lot of injuries, including Callum Ritchie, who did come back and play the second last game of the year, but he's dealing with a fairly significant shoulder injury, potential top round, first round pick. I believe on the latest Craigslist that came out today, he was ranked 25th. So he's going to participate, I believe, in the playoffs, but is dealing with a shoulder injury. They're missing Luca Morelli, who's not NHL draft eligible till next year. Suspension is not going to help things for the first two games at the Slush Puppy Center for Oshawa. They'll be in tough without injuries and suspensions, but when you add those in, it makes it a much tougher uphill battle.
Eats away at your depth. All right, we'll get into it more with the head coach of the Ottawa 67s about round one, which is almost here. Thursday night at the Slush Puppy Center is game one, and Dave Cameron is going to join us for his weekly visit at noon today. So played you the Gary Bettman interview from last night in our last segment, CJ. The Hockey Canada answer, he was quick to answer it and did imply that they're close. He feels that this is very close to winding down and getting the final results of the investigation, because the NHL has conducted its own investigation. And, of course, I would think this is going to be in concert with whatever the authorities have to say, and that's London Police.
Yes, definitely.
It's all going to have to. That's going to have to happen first. And so, yeah. If Gary Bettman is saying that last night, then he must have some knowledge, I would think, that we're close to getting resolution legally, mm-hmm. and then the NHL can release its findings and Hockey Canada and all of it here. So, anyways, shortly after that, last night, Rick Westhead had an update on this at TSN.ca. You can find the story there. I'll just read you the opening, and you'll get the gist of it. Players from Canada's 2018 World Junior team will not be allowed to play for the national team until an investigation of the alleged group sexual assault is completed. This is Hockey Canada telling Rick Westhead and TSN this in a statement. Here's the quote. Earlier this year, Hockey Canada made a decision that until the investigation and the process of the alleged incident in 2018 are complete, no players from the 2018 National Junior Team will be considered for participation for Team Canada. This has been communicated to the management group for Team Canada at the 2023 IIHF Men's World Championship, which will be co-hosted by Finland and Latvia. Blues general manager Doug Armstrong is serving as GM. He will also be working alongside Steve Yzerman, who is a part of the management team. This year's tournament goes May 12th to the 28th in Tampere, Finland, and Riga, Latvia. So, locally, that means Drake Batherson, even if he's not allowed to go, and Alex Formanton he's not a signed player, but still sends property, he would not be allowed to go. And you start to sift through players that we're talking about Jordan Kyrou and Robbie Thomas with the Blues. We're talking about maybe Carter Hart with the Flyers. Yeah. So this will affect, obviously, immediate participation. I don't think we're surprised by this, CJ, with this still hanging out there without the official legal resolution of the what happened, what didn't happen, what repercussions, if any, will come of this. Honestly, it makes sense for Hockey Canada to go this route.
Yep, and I listened to Mike Johnson on with JR and Matt this morning. You know, and he made a good point about, you know, some players weren't even in the country and have made it clear that they had nothing to do with what happened in London. So I guess you get to the question of whether or not this is fair, and because it's kind of painting everybody with the same brush at this point. And I guess my first thought on that is, well, that's the world that we live in. And at this point, and I'm not questioning anything anybody has had to say about the situation, but I guess my reaction is, looking at it from Hockey Canada's standpoint, Until you know the results of the investigation, how can you make any conclusions based on what anybody has said so far? So I understand Hockey Canada taking the position that until we have an official statement from London police, from the NHL investigation, which I think is in lockstep with the London police investigation, I can understand Hockey Canada's position here that, okay, a few players have made statements about, you know, their involvement, and we'll take those at face value. But until we get official results from an investigation, I don't think they can take those at anything more than face value. So I understand that there's at least a perception here of unfairness, but I also understand, with what's at stake, Hockey Canada's position that, look, we're just keeping everybody out until we get official word from these investigations about where we go for next steps. So is it unfair? I think on the surface you could say that it is, but at this point, with what Hockey Canada has been through already, that they can't afford another misstep here. They can't afford another PR disaster. So I think they've taken the safest route for them, and that's just to ban everybody until we figure out. I shouldn't say they figure out, until the London police and the NHL figure out their interpretation of what happened there. Then they'll take the safe route and just say no to everybody and wait and see like everybody else.
I think
does that make sense?
It does, and I would think that everybody listening to this would agree on this point. I hope that Gary Bettman is correct, that we're close to the end. And that means we get the final decision from London police. Then we get the decisions, if anything needs to be made, as Gary Bettman put it, if the NHL needs to do anything with their report from the NHL perspective, Hockey Canada, because unfortunately, with anything, especially with something as potentially unsavory as this, speculation always fills the void in anything. And this has been going on a long time, unfortunately. But we haven't heard much at all until yesterday on is there an update? And there you go. There's a little bit of an update from the commissioner. And then how Hockey Canada is going to handle it with the next round of international play, with the pro players at the very least. With anybody that was on the 2018 World Junior team is ineligible to wear the Maple Leaf at the upcoming Men's Worlds to be held in Finland and Latvia. Okay, before we go to break, I see all your texts. I think there might be a problem with our code word. I'm sure Kenny has seen this. I'm sure Kenny is looking into it with the appropriate people to see if there is a bug in the system. Don't worry, we'll get it all worked out here. If you're plugging in the code word that I gave you and it's not working, and apparently it's not, I can see that's all the text messages we have right now for most of them. So we're working on it, okay? That's all I can give you. It's happening in real time here, so we're looking to rectify that. We'll take a break. One more segment ahead of our next interview, and that's going to be with Dave Cameron, the head coach of the Ottawa 67s, is going to join us coming up at noon. Dean Brown on a Sens off day. They'll be back in the practice ice tomorrow. Will join us at 1 as our Sens and NHL insider. A little piece of Sens news from this morning. Not unexpected, as Cam Talbot has been tracking to being at full health. Well, apparently he is back to full health. Dylan Ferguson was returned to Belleville of the American Hockey League. So look for Cam Talbot to have his own net for the whole practice tomorrow, and then we'll see. Would he start Thursday against the Flyers? At minimum, he'll back up. And then the other topic, and we'll get more into this tomorrow as well, because we'll have eyes on a practice. Twofold. We haven't really touched on the status of Shabbat on this show. We'll get to that as well. But what about Tyler Cleven? It kind of felt like Thursday'd be the day. CJ, you and I discussed this on Friday. Just kind of made sense. Gap in the schedule, a couple more practices. Is that the day as well? So a lot to get to. Here and in the box at TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, in the spirit of, you know, sometimes if you just let things sit, it just takes care of itself. I guess that happened. I'm seeing all kinds of reports of people, hey, the code word's working now. So I don't know what happened. The code word that you heard earlier this hour is working now. Take another stab at it. Hit our website at tsn1200.ca. Hit the banner, plug it in, and get it in there, okay? And you have another chance on today's show still. 1 o'clock, we'll have a brand new code word. Each and every day this week, somebody wins an Artem Zub Sens Adidas Pro jersey. Steve Lloyd, Chris Stevenson with you today. Kenny Walls producing Dave Cameron in our next segment. All right, why don't I just want to get your thoughts on one of the other things asked Gary Bettman about last night, and that is the model for regional sports. I don't know. I think some people will find this boring, so I'm not going to get right into it. I find it interesting because it's all related to how the league operates. And generally speaking, if things happen in the U.S., right, from a media perspective, eventually history shows that things will start to happen in this, from the same perspective, sometimes not right away, and certainly not in this case. It's a different model than how things are working right now will affect us in Canada and how we consume media and sports. So anyways, that's why I think it's notable. So if you haven't been following along, the regional sports model, it's absolutely imploded in the United States. As of now, 10 teams out of 25 American teams are not affected by the regional networks going under. That's substantial. Only 10 of the 20. So 15 teams have seen are taking a big immediate hit to their revenue stream of what they sell their regional packages for. It's huge. This is what's left. NBC, the old NBC Sports Network, still has some regional channels that survived when that basically went under as well. But so NBC Regional Sports, that's still the Flyers, the Blackhawks, the Sharks, and the Capitals. That's still there. Our good buddy Jack Edwards, who makes news from time to time, I don't know if you notice that, on NESN, New England Sports Network. So the Bruins are good there. MSG has four teams with the MSG channels and MSG Plus and all that. It's the Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils, and the Sabres. Yeah. And then you got Altitude, and that's Denver. Everybody else that was like AT&T and Bally, I mean, that's 15 teams. That's almost half your league, well over half of your American teams.
Yeah.
So what the commissioner had to say in response to that is direct-to-consumer seems to be the way to go. Like, there's going to be streaming, and you're going to see some teams, I think, probably beef up their hire people as a media sales team, basically, and sell it like these regional sports network channels would sell it when they pay the rights. So there's not going to be a rights fee anymore. So bring it in-house and sell it all yourself and cut out the middleman, and you're going to be directing people to your website with a link to watch your games. And you'll pay for that, obviously.
Yeah.
Could be like some teams will do that. Could you see, you know, other online models cropping up? Could you see some of the big players in streaming? I'm talking about Apple and Amazon and Netflix and Hulu in the States and whatever, right? Could we see regional divisions of that pop up? And I don't know. Like, anyways, it's evolving. I do know this. And the commissioner did say this. This is something they're going to be really examining in the off season.
Yeah.
Because it's got to be scary in the here and now for a lot of teams. Like, that's a big chunk of change. And that will affect the league in the short term. But I really do think it will be okay. They just got to navigate getting on the other side of it. But it might take some time to get it all back up to financial speed, if you will.
Yeah, I feel like the Canadian teams, to a large extent, I feel are insulated from this, and will be for a while, just because of the difference in the place that hockey occupies in the respective countries' landscapes. Right, hockey's number one in Canada, so I think for TSN and Sportsnet. And so by extension for Bell and for Rogers, I think they're a long ways away from and the Canadian teams are a long ways away from facing such a dire change in the business model, just because hockey's so popular here. And I feel like there's still a lot of competition for the regional rights, but it is, The first thing that comes to mind for me is the NHL teams that are in this circumstance. If it had been a situation where they felt like they could cut out the middleman before and do it themselves, they would have done it long before now. So to me, this is not good news. That this you can paint this as like, here's a great opportunity for us. We can bring this in-house and we can make the money for ourselves. If that had been the case, they're smart enough to have figured out, hey, why are we selling our rights to somebody else who's making money off of them? So this is not a good situation, because this change in model would have happened a long time ago if those NHL teams thought that they could make more money doing it themselves. They clearly did not. So this is going to be a hit for them, and it's going to be a learning curve for them. To your point, as much as the business model of professional sports teams has changed from just trying to put a team on the ice that had championship aspirations, we've seen with team websites and team hired reporters, team hired content producers, that the job description for a professional sports franchise has changed immensely, right? They didn't used to be in the media business. Now they are. And I feel like this is the next step. It's been forced on them. It's probably come faster than what they anticipated with the collapse of Bally, Diamond Sports, whatever entity.
Sinclair. Yeah, there's so many layers.
Yeah, Sinclair. Yeah,
all the
exactly.
Same.
Yeah. So for me, the NHL is going to have to get up to speed. At least the teams in those markets that are affected are going to have to get up to speed pretty quick in terms of building a broadcaster, right? You've got to actually have the physical equipment on site to be able to broadcast the game. You need the talent to do it. And we know that it's considerable. We see it unfold when we're at Canadian Tire Center or on the road at rinks or whatever. There's a lot of people involved in putting a broadcast on the air. And that feels like it's going to be another area where a bunch of these teams are going to have to become adept very quickly at assembling those teams and all the infrastructure necessary to be able to put a game on television or stream or broadcast, whatever. And on top of that, be able to make money off of it, which means having a sales staff out there to generate the advertising to support all of this. I think it's a tremendous expense and a tremendous undertaking, which the NHL is going to have to figure out how to do in relatively short order. Now, it's interesting to me that does this present an opportunity? So, like, we've seen what DAZN and stuff like that come in for NFL football. Is there going to be a company that arises out of this with its own model and expertise in doing this already that might fill the void? And it won't be a broadcaster. It'll be a streaming service. So I think in this there is opportunities for somebody. There is opportunity for somebody. But what that's going to look like is really, really intriguing. To see how out of the ashes of this, what exactly is going to emerge. And like you said, what's going to be the new model for going forward? And ultimately, will it be a good model perhaps when deals come up in Canada for a change in the way that we consume our games here?
No, it's, you know, the pivot's been going on for the last number of years, but this is really forces the hand of almost half the NHL. With their regional package, and I'm going to be very curious to see how, because every team will look at it a bit differently about what they're going to do. Will there be an overall partnership with one of the bigger players? Will you do it all in house? It's in the short term, though. I would think it affects revenue in the short term.
Yes,
there's going to be
absolutely.
Some startup capital to get this thing rolling. I think eventually you'll be fine. It's just a matter, you're just going to be delivering things differently. But it's something else to tackle from the league perspective, and we'll see how each team that is affected by this deals with it this offseason. Okay, it's noon. Uh-oh, we're late. Okay, Dave had a practice today, so maybe he's late. Maybe we're good. But Dave Cameron joins us next on In the Box at TSN 1200.